Thank you for joining us for this episode of Take Notice, Amplifying Black Stories. I am your host, Allison Preisinger-Higgins. Take Notice, Amplifying Black Stories is a podcast exploring society, culture, and current events through conversation. We aspire to create an open, respectful, and equitable space where guests may feel free to share their truth and lived experiences. Our core values are rooted in community, connection, and personal development. Stories help us learn, relate, and grow. We are here to listen, to take notice. Thank you for being with us. I would like to show gratitude to the traditional ancestral land of the Puyallup people, past and present, on which this episode was created. I encourage listeners to research the land on which you live and are listening right now. Recognizing this is just the beginning. The more you explore, challenge, and learn, the more questions may arise, but this is how we grow and connect. On this episode, we welcome Matt McAllman. Matt is the drummer for the Seattle-based group, the Marshall Law Band. The Marshall Law Band has embarked on two successful European tours and garnered attention from prominent media outlets in recent years, including BBC News, CNN, the Seattle Times, and other national and regional press. I am thrilled that they were able to hang out with me a few weeks ago down in Tacoma, and I had a great conversation with both Marshall and Matt in the Tacoma Armory space. Matt and I discuss his experience growing up kind of around in different areas around the country and his experience coming to Seattle about 19 years ago and growing into the music community here through a variety of ways, including Mojam Mondays, which is an event that happens at the Nectar on Monday nights in Seattle. We also discuss his experience bringing music to CHOP, the protests in Seattle in 2020 on Capitol Hill, and many other things that we cover in this episode that you don't want to miss, like playing drums in space and Lego building. So please enjoy this episode with Matt McAllman. Thank you for joining me on Take Notice.
And thanks for having me.
Coming down to Tacoma. I appreciate it.
You know what I'm saying? I always drive to Tacoma. I got love for Tacoma.
Yeah. Did you grow up here or in Seattle? Or
where did you I'm an import, so I've been in Seattle for 19 years this weekend.
Okay. That's longer than a lot of people.
This Fremont Friday is going to be my anniversary of my move to Seattle.
So. Oh, sweet. Where'd you move from?
I moved here from New York, moved there from Florida, moved there from Nevada, moved there from Hawaii, moved there from Nevada, there from New York.
Oh, wait. So the beginning was New York?
The beginning was New York.
Okay.
Yeah, you didn't even get lost. You know, like the little cup trick.
No, I see things in my brain that way. So you're kind of like did the whole circle around the country.
Yeah, I've been around. Yeah, I've been around.
What part of New York were you born in?
I was born in Long Island.
Okay.
And then grew up in Brooklyn, and then moved to Nevada. Okay. Grew up in Carson City, and then just started traveling. Went to Hawaii, back to Nevada, Florida, New York. Whew. And then my bass player from my high school band got into UW and was like, man, come to Seattle. You'll love it up here.
Yeah.
I've been here ever since.
It's 19 years. I guess he was right. Yeah. That's awesome. What initially brought you to Nevada, that first move?
My mom.
When you were...
I was like five.
You were young. Yeah. Okay. Was it like a job thing or...
No. Her family... like had moved out of New York to Nevada, so we just went to be close to family.
To follow them. That's great. What'd your mom do when you were growing up?
Mostly just went to school. She started started teaching my freshman year in high school and will retire shortly.
Oh, sweet. What does she teach?
Over the years she's taught a lot of things. She taught math first and then got certified as a sign language interpreter and then started teaching a sign language class and created like a whole curriculum for that.
Oh, cool.
And then now she's the dean of students and
in this area or
in Nevada.
In Nevada. Okay. That's awesome. So she would teach like high college?
She's high school. She also taught at the college, community college as well.
Wow. And ASL. I've been interested in learning that. That's really cool.
Funny jokes. She's like going deaf now. As she's getting older, which is, she's like totally fine with.
I'm set. I've been planning for this. Do you understand ASL then or no?
I mean, I can just get by and let people know that like my mom's a teacher and hey, how are you? And you're not alone.
Nice.
But
yeah,
by no means do I speak it as fluently as my mom or sister.
Sure, sure. Yeah, who else were you surrounded by growing up?
I have a bunch of sisters. I have a stepbrother, a couple stepsisters as well, but I love them all very dearly. And we like have grown up together since I was like 11.
You and your step siblings?
Me and all my other siblings, mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're all pretty close in age. My stepbrother and I are like 6 months apart.
Oh, nice.
Depending on what month it is, my sisters are two ages or one age, but I have three sisters. So there's a set of twins, and my other stepsister is only 6 months apart from them. So like sometimes they're all the same age, sometimes they're not.
That's cool.
So when people ask my mom, they're like, oh, how old are all your kids? She's like, what's today's date?
Let us get the calculator out. Yeah,
I could have five children that are two ages, or I could have five children that are four ages, and people are like, what?
Hold on. That's awesome. Are your siblings all in Nevada, or are they
They're
everywhere?
All over the place. My brother is in New Mexico. One of my sisters is in Arizona. One's in D.C. One's in Connecticut. One's in Nevada. And then I'm up here in Seattle.
Nice. Yeah. So you got it. It's hard.
You pretty much got the whole map covered. You know what I'm saying?
You're good. Yeah. And when you want to go visit somewhere, you're just like, all right, I'm coming.
I'm like, yo, I'm pulling up with the band. We're all going to crash at your house. All right.
Oh, there you go. That's why they live everywhere.
Strategic planning.
I love it. That's so smart. So for you, when did music come into your life? Because you're a drummer.
Yeah.
Do you play other instruments as well?
I mean, I'm blessed to have all these guys around. I know how to make everything make noise. I can, you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
But I would be amiss to say I play anything compared to them. I just play the drums.
Sure, sure. When did you get into drums?
I got my first drum set when I was five.
Oh, nice.
Because my mom was tired of me banging on her pots and pans. And then, you know, she said it was great childcare because she always knew right where I was at.
Good point. I like it.
So it's just always been a part of me growing up. I played the clarinet in like elementary school and middle school. And then as soon as I could get my hands on a drum set, I never looked back.
That was it. Nice. Do you feel like clarinet helped you in some
realize how much clarinet sucks?
Understood.
No.
I mean, it could go that way, too.
It taught me a lot about music, and I really would have loved to learn how to play, like, the piano at a young age. Mm-hmm. I think teaching children how to play music when they're young and have time not only occupies them in a healthy way, but when you get older, it's hard to find time for anything, right? Especially learning something new.
Mm-hmm.
And so just building those fundamentals of music and communication, both through language and through music, which is the oldest and most widely spoken language on the planet, being able to tap into that in a youth format is something we always, as the martial law band, have tried to push and support as well.
Yeah, because when you are an adult, there's so many more mental blocks that don't need to be there, but they're there now, and so it's so much easier when you're a kid. Yeah. Piano, that one, because you can translate that.
Yeah, it's the basis. It's the basis of everything.
So great. So after Nevada, Nevada the first time, or were you there more than once?
Yeah, so I was living in Nevada. I graduated high school, moved to Hawaii for a little bit, moved back to Nevada, and then just really hated where I was living.
Mm.
I just always knew the world was gigantic, and I wanted to see all of it and be a part of it. And where I grew up in Nevada, in Carson City, it's changing slowly, but it's never going to change.
Mm.
So it's nice. It's always home. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great to go back and visit, but I love being a member of the great big world.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I grew up out here and I still feel that way, even though it's beautiful here and I love coming back, but there's so much out there. Why would you just stay in one spot? At least for me.
But that's what I'm saying.
Totally. So did you, after high school, so you were you in bands and stuff in high school?
Yeah, I was in bands, recorded my first album in high school.
Nice.
Been chasing the music passion since forever.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of projects and stuff did you do post high school, and did you go to college?
I went to college all over the place in Nevada, in Florida, in New York, here at Seattle Central.
Oh, okay.
And then my drum instructor was like, what other classes do you want to be taking? Are you taking? And I was like, I'm taking the absolute minimum requirements in like as many music classes as possible. And he was like, just keep practicing and go pursue it if you want to pursue it. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to be a gigging musician, go start gigging.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's for sure what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And so I took a bunch of business classes because I was interested in that. And I wanted to learn how the music business worked. Mm-hmm. And then I like making money. I love playing music. I get ecstatic when I get to do both of those things at the same time.
Totally. Were you similar to me to where you had to do a bunch of other non-music related jobs? Or were you gigging pretty quickly and getting work that way?
It was actually really hard for me to find work in New York when I was gigging as a drummer because I was under 21.
Oh.
So there's a lot of like opportunities and bands are like, yeah, dude, let's do it. And I wouldn't be able to get into the club or something.
Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't even let you in for the gig, right?
In New York, they were, this is pre-COVID New York,
they were stingy.
This is the way it is.
Okay.
And being out here, when I moved out west, I had my bass player and him and I had a project we were starting. And then while he'd be in school, I'd be working or just meeting new people and be like, hey, you play music, let's play some music. And one day I was working a non-music job and was walking down the street and seeing Mo of Mo Jam Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she was like, asked me if I played music. I told her I did. She immediately walked me inside, got me on the drums next, started ripping, started coming regularly. And that's when I started meeting the boys. And Evan, the bass player, and I used to play in a band together and we were touring and he came back and calls me one day and says, hey, you want to play with this band I'm in? I said, man, say when and where. And, you know, martial law band, been rocking ever since.
That was it. So that's nice though, that you've kept the non-music to a minimum, it sounds like.
Yeah. Especially this last year, I've been blessed to position my life to a point where I play with a lot of people around town now and they all know and respect that martial law band's my first commitment, but as much as I can, sometimes as many as three times a day last weekend, I play with a bunch of really talented artists all around the city.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And knowing, if I understand right, I mean, finding a good drummer and percussionist is
apparently we're in high demand, you know?
Yes. It can be tricky. Or one that's available, because if they're, yeah, anyway, at least in this area, it seems like.
Drums are a crucial part of any band's sound,
mm-hmm.
as is the bass player, as is the relationship between those two,
right.
those two instruments. You can, yeah, you can make or break a lot of things with that.
Yes, yeah. What kinds of things? So you were with the band during the protests and things like as well.
I've been with the band since we've been the martial law band.
Mm-hmm.
They were the Marshall Mung and the Mung Stars, I think was their name before me. And ever since I've been in the band, it's been martial law band.
Yeah, yeah. What have been some of your favorite experiences or tours or?
I really love when we go anywhere together. We're generally, as a band, we're larger than most people, which is great. When we walk in a room, we at least got 3 to 5 inches on everybody in the room.
Oh, really?
But we're also also a really good time. So whenever we get to go somewhere together, it's out of hand, especially when we get our extended family, JMO the Bird, Tawny Jr., Chris King traveling with us. You start getting people playing music on the airplane and in the airplane lobby and just out front of the club or on the beach. And our brotherhood and camaraderie has stood a lot of ups and downs and trials and tribulations. But to show that we can do it with our different ethnicities, our different opinions on life, on the world itself, and we can maintain that commitment to each other and respect for each other. And then we can bring it to our community and then we bring it to our region. There's nothing except, you know, multiplying to really make a global world change for the better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I imagine even having a relationship with one other person is hard enough. So then seven of you all together, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I guess families are that big. I'm just thinking through this like creatively and logistics wise and all those things. Like that's a lot of work to,
that many people to get together multiple times a week, you know?
Right, schedule-wise, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Look at yourself in the mirror and ask yourself how often you get together with your one friend.
Right.
Let alone six of the same friends regularly with a multiple times a week commitment.
Totally.
You don't got any friends like that.
You're
in a band if you got friends like that, you know?
Exactly,
because it's a different way of life. Like, mm-hmm. we're connected to each other. Those are my brothers for life. We've been through more than we could even tell people about.
Mm-hmm. And it's more than even the work. Cause I was thinking, well, when you work with people, you see them that much, but it's more than that because you have to
work with people, you're all getting paid.
That too. And there's somebody else making all the decisions on.
Yeah. You know, it's like, this is the best way to do this unless mm-hmm. you have a better idea. Like,
right.
Let's get to schlepping.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a totally different working relationship and just relationship. So what are some of the things that have helped you all sustain in your mind and and thrive, I suppose is a better word.
I think it really starts with respect. You know, all of us have a deep respect for each other. All of us are good at our craft and recognize that. But also, all of us are good men in the world and recognize that. And mm-hmm. there's a certain sense of superhero that I feel I view them as due to some of our instances at the CHOP and things we went through.
Mm-hmm.
I got superheroes on my band. What you got?
I love that. Can you describe that a little bit more? Like some of those experiences?
There was a point when the tanks were coming down the road, the police are coming down, shooting tear gas at people, and people are running like, yo, we got to get out of here. And I have a drum set. We have a stage. Like, we have amps. We're not running anywhere. It's going to take me 45 minutes to get out of here on a good day. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not running anywhere, so, like, we don't have another option. And I turned and check for Marshall and a check for JMO, our Samoan band brother. And I look around and I didn't see any of the other boys.
Hmm.
I had a moment of panic. I looked at Marshall. He didn't see them either. We turn around and look and everyone had ran and only my band members were standing at the fence with their hands up and police walking at them. And it was like, it was a very pivotal moment, I believe, because at that point it was either the cops were going to tackle six white men and that was going to be all hell breaks loose, or they stopped and turned around and they stopped and turned around. But mm-hmm. when it really came down to it, everyone else was gone but our guys who were willing to lay their lives down for us. And you show me someone who could beat that.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I imagine that's a very unique experience to share with you. You know, as that creates, I can imagine, a bond that you can't really even describe other than what you just did. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whew. Yeah. Because you all were there playing and performing every day for a couple of weeks.
Hours a day.
Mm-hmm. And what brought you to that space for you? Like, what was your experience going from?
Marshall and I went out there and just sat in the car and watched the first day.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, we need to bring our piece to this because that's what's missing. And music's been present in every revolution in history. And it's our job and our responsibility to carry those torches of the people who got there before us. You know, people talk about our ancestors, but it wasn't just black people who freed slaves. It was white people as well. And people forget that. And we are making change and it is slow and it is painful, but it also is necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you all decided as a group and as a as a collective to the next day.
To do what we do best. The best thing we have to offer the world is music, because music isn't about you. You're merely a vessel. Mm-hmm. And it's the responsibility of those with gifts to use them. Otherwise, they'll be taken from you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I like that outlook. I try to remind myself of that too. When you get in your head.
And everybody has a different skill set. I think that's one of the strong suits that we have, at least between ourselves, is like, I know who we are as a group. I know who we are all as individuals, and we walk in that. Mm. And when you can be true to who you are, everything else that sticks to you is going to be true as well.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you attract what
you draw. You draw it to you.
Mm-hmm. When you're focused in on, yeah. So you have the role of drummer in this group, but also I know, like, as you all are working in a mindful way moving forward as businessmen too and entrepreneurs, you probably have other roles besides drummer.
Yeah, quite a few.
Actually. I imagine
as we all do. We all do a ton of stuff. Mm-hmm. Generally, we all don't do the same stuff either, which makes us more efficient.
Makes total sense. Yeah. So, because you took some music business classes, you were saying. So, what kind of things do you focus on for you or for the band?
I generally run the money for the band and our expenses and our budgeting for upcoming expenses. And I'd be on Marshall's helmet or our manager Mira's helmet, like, yo, we need to be playing some more shows. We need some more money coming in, because the money's definitely going out.
We got to have this balance.
But it's music is a long road. Mm-hmm. People who want to get into the music business for a quick check or think they're going to have as many streams as Drake does overnight are absolutely kidding themselves.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. But if you're willing to play and battle the war of attrition and play the game to win the game, not just to have highlights along the way, mm-hmm. you can ride on our team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been hearing that more and more from I don't want to say old timers, but long timers. You know what I mean? Like people who have been in the music business for a while. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of more like, instead of burning bright and fast, burning super slow and simmering and just doing the thing.
And just continuing to do what you do, you know? Mm-hmm. We play music. Lately, we've really fallen into a groove of trying to write new music mm-hmm. one day a week and then trying to rehearse music the other day of the week. Mm-hmm. And it's really, I think, opened up a remembrance of the value of just putting out music. In a rap world, you're dropping singles off of whoever's beat you got. You don't have to do a ton of mixing and mastering. You do some ad libs and you punch it. It's just vocal tracks. With a band, you have to write everything, rehearse it, get it tight, go and record it all, which takes a ton of mixing, mastering, engineering, all of this. Mm-hmm. And then you have to repeat. And bands have moved away from making projects and are just making singles because that's the rate in which human society is eating that. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a certain value that comes with dropping an album and a certain value that does come with feeding the people's daily need. And so we're trying to find a happy blend in that.
Yeah.
But I think we really have a special kind of sound, which is actually making it more and more difficult to promote properly for all the things. It's like, who do you sound like? Well, I always grew up wanting to like have our own sound and a big sound and a big band and things of that nature. But you don't see a lot of people doing that and then rapping on top of it as a lead singer. Mm. Also someone who's rapping something conscious and productive and hopefully changing the world and spreading love. You start getting into like acts like Common, The Roots, things of that nature. And so I think trying to find our own lane, but also not being afraid to just create one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. When you were growing up learning drums and getting more and more into music, who were the bands or the groups or the people that you were most glommed onto, would you say?
I mean, I've always been a huge Dave Matthews Band fan. Oh, I really love Incubus and the drummer for that, Jose Pascuales. I love mm-hmm. Chad Smith from the Chili Peppers. I also like old stuff. Buddy Rich, Mitch Mitchelson, who played with Jimi Hendrix. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, we could sit and talk music all day, but those mm-hmm. are definitely some of the top guys. Like just John Bonham, mm-hmm. you know, Ringo okay. Starr has more hits than any other drummer. Dave Grohl, you know, there's, mm-hmm. there's a long list of awesome cats who it's always built into them. Rest in peace, Taylor Hawkins. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Does that, so that influence translates musically. What about the influence? What am I trying to say? Maybe either creatively or philosophy wise, like as far as trying to bring some change to the world through your all's music. Do you have an influence from when you were younger?
I mean, Bob Marley. Hmm. It when all else fails, play Bob Marley, right? Like it's good in every circle. Mm-hmm. I want to be that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Frank Sinatra, a household name that's good in every circle. It doesn't matter where you're at. You mm-hmm. drop a Frank Sinatra track, everybody's loving it. Mm-hmm. So getting my music to a point where that is the case. Mm-hmm. Everybody thought U2 was a gigantic band, but if you drop Chaka Khan, everybody knows all the words to the hook. So, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. You put on some Bob Marley anywhere.
Anywhere. It feels like it's good anywhere.
He kind of follows me through the grocery stores. I'm like, you're here too.
He's everywhere.
Yes. So you said you went to Seattle Central. And so did you kind of piecemeal together just some your music education and then your music business education?
Or they were running simultaneously, and then I'd run out of grant money, and I'd learned enough in business that I knew I didn't want to be in debt for something I didn't want to do anyway.
Totally. Yeah.
And like me dedicating my time to something I was going to be in debt for that I didn't want to do in the first place was just so upside down. I couldn't get myself to swallow it.
Yes.
And I called my mom and I was like, listen, mom, I am dropping out of college. Like, I don't owe any money. I don't want to owe any money. You still owe money. Like, it's not what I want to do with my life. I want to go play the drums. Mm-hmm. And she's like, at this point, there's nothing I could tell you. Mm-hmm. You're on your own. If you think you can do it, I'm here to support you and I wish you the best. And let me know.
Mm-hmm. Was it expected that you go to college kind of thing? Or was it more you decided to do it and try things out?
Education was always a very prevalent and heavy-handed thing in my household. My mom's a teacher. Mm-hmm. My siblings all went to college and or joined the military, which is awesome. They all mm-hmm. did great things. Mm-hmm. I personally pursued a more rare more rare profession.
Yes. Yeah, it does feel rare, and then as you start to get into the world, it seems less and less rare, but really it is. You know, you just meet more and more musicians or artists and stuff, and you're like, this is normal.
Yeah, but then I met a ton of people who play music, but people who play music for a living is a whole nother.
This is true.
It's a whole nother world of people.
Very true. Good point. Moving forward, like you already said that you would like some of your influences as far as being able to be a household name and being able to put that music on. So what are...
Play music in outer space.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Would you bring your kit?
Absolutely.
Yeah. How would that... I'm trying to picture it.
You just mount it down like you would on the jelly bean with like these hooks that I have. Because when you're moving and your cymbals and drums are moving, it's a problem. So we learned how to bolt our gear down to the floor.
That makes sense.
So there's nothing stopping me from like playing upside down or playing in zero G. I'm totally prepared for it.
That's awesome. Yeah. You just gotta get your body ready for it at that point, right? Mm-hmm. With the
you just gotta get used to the zero G, but like upside down, right side up, doesn't matter. You'll be fine.
Awesome. So how long has that been a dream?
So the first time I saw a concert, maybe when I was like 8.
Really?
I seen a drummer raise up, spin around. I was like, I want to do that for a living. Been at it ever since.
What concert was that?
That was the Newsboys.
The Newsboys?
Yeah.
I don't know if I know that. They went upside down?
Drummer flipped upside down.
That's wild. Was he like harnessed into mm-hmm. the...
Clipped in and I was like, I want to do that.
That's amazing. That's cool. So for the float that you all have for the Fremont Fridays, you all have this.
The SS Jelly Bean?
Yes. So did you, you must have helped outfit that because you got to figure out how to get your drums on there and everything.
Yeah, my keyboard player Mercy and I rebuilt it again this year. We stripped it all the way down to the studs and built it from the ground up. But yeah, it's a 26 foot long, 8 feet on the air, 8 foot 4 inches in real life platform that just drives around. And it's on a 26 foot boat trailer.
Okay.
And so we built it. It's got like a 2 tiers. The back end is a 4x8 sheet that's about 3 feet off the ground.
Oh, okay. For the drums or for?
No, it's actually just small enough the drums don't fit up there. Oh, okay. So we usually put Marshall or the sax player up there.
Nice.
Both.
Or both, yeah.
Both sometimes.
We fit, yeah. So for your drum set on there, do you have a like fixed hardware on the float that you
so I just have regular hardware like any other drum set, but then I just got some C bolts or like C clamps, and then we just screw it down over the legs and it just holds it in place.
Okay
But it's like screwed into the wood frame of the actual jelly bean,
so you need a drill to be able to get yourself out of there.
Once it's in, it's like in until you take it out.
Yeah, well that's good. Awesome. I'm trying to picture it all in my head because I don't think I've seen any images of this yet. So I'm gonna look this up and potentially see you all with this.
Yeah, you should definitely pull up and see see the jelly bean in action. It's a force to be reckoned with.
It sounds like it. I love it.
Because it's one thing to see it at a show. It's another thing when we used to ride on it. And I say used to because we don't ride on it anymore.
Oh, like in what? How do you mean?
Like, we used to just drive around with, like, my cousin driving us.
During COVID.
And then
all
of us would just be on it playing whilst driving.
Yes. I can imagine. You have to, did you map out the where you're
going? Oh, yeah, like, which way to go? Yeah, for sure.
So you end up on, like, a massive hill or something. See, this is where my brain goes. Logistics.
Logistics. It's my whole department.
I bet. So you've got the money. You've got the logistics of, like, with the travel and everything, are you a big part of that then, I imagine, planning?
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's me.
Yeah.
But it's great. I get all the flyer miles for it because I buy them, you know, on my thing. So it works out. Go. Yeah, it's a win-win.
Business-wise, yeah. Do you all have a Marshall Law Band, like, LLC or something like that? Yeah. Nice. So what's your next big tour? You're going to the East Coast?
So, yeah, we're going to go hit the East Coast for the first time, which I'm pumped about. We're going to do the West Coast again for this NACA convention. Hopefully we make it out to Hawaii around New Year's, and then...
And that would be for playing or for chilling or for both?
Both.
Both. Nice.
And then come back and be heavy in the studio. January is generally like heavy in the studio for the Marshall Law Band, just making sure we're stacking up the vault so we have stuff for the year to release.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, that's a good way to do it because January is quiet.
It's a dead month for the business.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome. Yeah, I remember when I was booking for the Royal Room in Seattle. It's like January is like, meh.
January's dead. February sucks because it's the shortest month. And then they got a Hallmark holiday in the middle.
Right. Yeah.
And then you get to March. St. Patrick's Day is when business begins again.
Mm-hmm. Starts kicking. Mm-hmm. That's smart. I like it. Have you all played in Hawaii before?
Yeah, we've actually been out there a couple times. And I can't say that I have a favorite because it's awesome every time.
Yeah, I bet that would be a fun trip.
It's great to be there with each other at the beach, reminiscing about our year of work, getting excited for our year of work ahead.
Mm. So do you normally plan that at the end of the year then to kind of like have a hang?
It's always like a plan in slow motion.
Oh, okay.
That one's like on the very, very, very back burner. It just sits on low. It's like a slow roast.
Nice. Well, it's good to have that, like, just hanging, and then you get to it when you can.
It's a great meal when you get to it.
I love it. That sounds like a packed, busy time, but also at the same time, that's what you're focused on. So it's not, like, in my brain, I have, like, all these different fires that I'm trying to do, and your fires are very condensed into the one focused thing, and I love that. That's great. I love it.
Candle life.
I love it. So, let's see. So, I think with Marshall, we were talking about a little bit about balance and self-care a bit. And self-care is a kind of loaded word, I suppose. But wellness, I'll say.
Important.
What kinds of things have you been working on that as well? Have you found the need for that? I imagine everybody has the need for that in some way.
Absolutely. I think we all do and mm-hmm. all still are working on that and dealing mm-hmm. with that. I have a very unique role in the band where I get to play the drums. So a lot of my passion and frustration with life or irritation with the world the way it is comes out through my drumming, which is super therapeutic for me and makes me, I believe, a happier, better person.
That's good. So you found your thing very early on.
Yeah, it's the one thing that's always been there for me.
Mm-hmm. I can understand and that. Yeah.
Always just is there waiting for me to get to it and mm-hmm. holds no judgment. But I feel like that's with music in general. That's why everybody plays music, whether they do it for a career or not, is the therapy that it gives. And I think music's great. That's why we started our nonprofit organization, Music for Everyone, because we're trying to, not everybody wants to go experience a big live concert and be around that many people anymore.
Right.
And so finding a way to still get music to those people, whether it's in small batch concerts, more intimate experiences with artists. We started doing silent DJs now and doing performances where people can have headphones and feel safe in their own world, but still be experiencing music and bringing it to places and people who don't have the opportunity. We live in the Northwest, a big, beautiful art city full of music. It's not like that everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so bringing music to those people as well is part of our goal.
Mm, I love that. Did you all start that recently as well?
Yeah, actually, we just got it in the mail.
Oh, official. Sweet. Very nice. Congratulations. That's awesome. Thanks. So have you started any pieces of that, or are you just kind of, it's the, in the
yeah,
works?
Yeah, so the like whole the, organization is mm-hmm. is structured and had to be in order to get approved for everything. We're just now finally able to take it to market and to the people.
Okay. And is it like a 501c3 mm-hmm. kind of thing? Okay, sweet. Do you have things lined up then?
Now yeah, that you have, that's actually NACA is going to be our first in for that. That's our first big push with them. So we have a booth that's pushing our Music for Everyone and highlighting our different talents as a band, whether it be teaching lessons, recording and engineering sessions, making beats, just showing the gambit of things that are under that umbrella and that we can bring to the table and bring to their schools and their communities.
Oh, that's exciting. That sounds really great. So it's more than going and showcasing, because for anybody that's listening that doesn't know what NACA is, it's like the conference for colleges and
yeah, it's I think it's the National Association of Collegiate Arts. And so it's their big national conference that colleges will send their representatives who do the booking for different colleges around the country. Mm-hmm. They'll send them to these. So we'll meet them. And when we're on tour, stop at their college and play a show or do an event for them and help us keep on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. A great supplement for regular gigging, I imagine. But you'll be going there and not only showcasing your band, the Martial Law Band, but you'll be showcasing this nonprofit. So that's pretty amazing. I love that.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. We've been working hard on that. That's like when we started seeing where our strengths were and where our overlying passions were, and we started whittling out things that weren't either of those, mm-hmm. we found these things to encompass our goal the most.
Yeah. I think that's great too, because a lot of times people or younger people or people that don't know the music business so well, they see it from a different view than musicians that are in it or art or dance or whatever it is. The world around it has changed so much to where you're not just going to go get signed somewhere and you have to have all these pieces of your career that you're building. And so you going to these spaces and going to schools and everything and kind of showcasing that, like the seven of you have all these different hats that you're collectively working on together to create careers for yourselves and to support other people.
Yeah, you know, and pave a way for the Northwest to be shown some love and respect in the greater musical community. It's just, it's such a far out of the way city when you're booking a tour that it gets left behind often.
Yeah. Yeah. I have noticed that with some things. We, you know, we've got, unless folks are hitting like Vancouver, Portland, maybe Boise's been a thing lately, seems like.
Yeah. We were out there for Tree Fort.
Yeah. That's right. That's a, I haven't been there, but I keep seeing
it. It was a great
time.
We had a blast.
Really cool one. Nice. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, because, yeah, I think maybe in my conversation with Marshall, we were talking about, you know, do you all move to Nashville, to LA, but I think you all have such deep roots here at this point that it makes sense.
Yeah, we all love being from Seattle. We all love living in Seattle. We all hate that we have to travel from Seattle to go tour. It's just, you know, it's so far. Like, it adds a whole day of just travel time to go anywhere outside of the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah. Yeah, so true. And it becomes even more...
Like, on the East Coast, in that amount of hours, you can be through 10 states and 57 cities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we got Portland, Seattle, San Francisco. You know what I'm saying? Like...
Yeah, you don't have to drive 6 hours to get to a place when you're on the East Coast, which is, yeah, definitely a benefit for there. But everything else is a benefit for over here. So, yeah. Well, I think that's great because the more programs and groups that are successful that are promoting, you know, music in this area and that the arts are possible, the more people are going to get it and get it quicker as far as, like, it takes more than just the talent and all that stuff to do the thing. So that's awesome. I love that. Congratulations on the nonprofit status. That's no small thing. No, you know?
It's a lot of work, but appreciated. Yeah. The band's been working hard, and now that we have it, it like opens the door for us to work harder, but more efficiently as well.
What is something that aside from music brings you joy?
I really love traveling. And honestly, like, when I get really frustrated and just, like, kind of searching for the right next step, I like to build Legos.
Sweet.
I'm, like, a super Lego maniac. And friends of mine, because I don't build, like, the little Legos. I build, like, the big ones.
Oh, okay.
And friends of mine are like, yo, how did you get all those? Like, I couldn't have done that many things. And there's, like, some sort of... sense it makes to me, and just laying it out step by step lets me like focus my thoughts and figure out which step is next in the building process. It's just something I've noticed, like when I really am searching for the right next step, I always like buy some crazy monstrous Lego and build it, and I'm like, oh, now I figured out what I need to go do, and then I don't have time to do it again for a really long time until I'm all twisted up in my head, and then I can...
That's how you process.
Process my thoughts out.
Oh, that's interesting. I really like that. It's like the jumbo ones. It's not like the little...
Like I built like the Millennium Falcon Collector's Edition. It was
I see.
7,400.
So not... Okay, so I was picturing bigger Legos in my head, but you mean more like the
big... like as big as your table.
Like the big... Like it's model a bit, things, not but not the pieces.
No, like little Lego pieces, but the big model, like my Millennium Falcon's probably as big as this table.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah, because a lot of people do like models and painting that figurines or something like that, which is just you're honed in on
it's your fine detail
thing.
Work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's like if you miss a step, the whole thing might not fit together. Right. Like 200 steps down the way. So like it's important to be diligent and pay attention to all your steps. It's important to do them. And I think that basis implements like my processing when I'm thinking about stuff and just like one after another with the vision being this final product, but also knowing that you can only do it with incremental pieces.
Yeah.
And as the drummer, I've always known I needed other people to be successful in what I wanted to do, which is different than any other instrument.
True. Yeah.
And so I think my view towards a team is always very, very, very like heavy in my decision making.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. And when you're doing one thing at a time,
it always starts with one thing at a time.
Yeah. And you have to really, you can't really think about anything else. I'm sure your mind wanders, but like you have to be focused on that.
Mm-hmm. And so, because if you miss one,
the thing, yeah,
if you miss one, you're going to pay for it. And then you're going to have to come back and go back through it and dig. And then you're like, I should have paid attention.
Right.
You only do that so many times. And either you learn or you just keep beating your head against the wall.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I imagine.
This is the moneymaker. It can't be beating it against the wall.
None of that. No. None of that. Yeah. Well, that makes sense. I like that. That's great. And that's something that you can pull up whenever you need it and use it. I love it. Is there anything, I know that I probably have a million questions I'm not thinking of right now, but is there anything that we missed or that you wanted to mention before we wrap up?
Man, Fremont Friday, the gala. Make sure you be good to each other, you know? Love is patient. Love is kind. And remember that at the end of the day, we're all going to be neighbors and we're stuck in this big blue bubble together. So be cool.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing your story and for hanging out with me this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Appreciate your time. Yeah.
You guys take care. Make sure you stay tapped in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we will share all the things Martial Law Band on our show notes and all the things.
Martial Law Band everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for Take Notice, Amplifying Black Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to share it with someone you know. Connect with us on social media. We would love to hear from you. We are at Take Notice Podcast. You can also find us at takenoticepodcast.org. Reviews help us reach more listeners, so please rate and review on your favorite podcast app. Take Notice, Amplifying Black Stories is produced, hosted, and edited by Allison Preisinger Higgins. Music by Version Big 5 featuring Darius Higgins. Thank you for being with us, and thank you for taking notice.